98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo starts now.
Straight up 2 o'clock on this Wednesday afternoon. Good afternoon and welcome into today's edition of the Burns and Gambo Show. Here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station, we are live from the Occhian Community Studios. My name is Dave Burns, alongside the one, the only, John Gambadoro. Hi, Gambo!
Oh, Burnsy, what's going on? Let me first apologize if you spent even 5 minutes watching that U of A basketball game last night. My apologies to you for wasting your time. You should have just put on that, whatever, that HBO Max show that you're so tuned into about the end of the world as we know it, and watch that. So my apologies if I, you know, got very excited for a game with the number 3 team in the country playing the number 7 team in the country because U of A failed to show up last night.
Got a tweet last night from Gambo about the time, let's see, it was at 10:23 p.m., on the 25th of January, 2022, Arizona looks so bad tonight, can't make shots, turning the ball over, so sloppy. I feel bad I tried to talk at Burnsy 987 into watching this game. You should. You should feel bad. I'm tired. I'm sluggish. I'm dragging. I'm already on like my fifth cup of coffee. I'm caffeinated, Gambo. It's the only thing I got going. It's coursing through my veins right now. I stayed up. I didn't make it to the end. I drifted off just about the time you sent that tweet. I made it through like the first 5 minutes of the second half or so, and then I watched the rest this morning. I saw them cut it to, what was it, like 8 with about 7 minutes to go.
Yeah,
Gambo,
30.7.
They shot 30.7% from the floor. You talked me into this game. I could have finished Station 11 last night. I would have been happy to finish Station 11 last night. But no. Yeah. Nope. I can't watch.
They just started. You know, there was a point that, you know, first of all, the game didn't. I had to switch over to ESPN News because the other game was going overtime.
Ran long, right? Yeah.
Which kind of pissed me off. But then they were 6-7 from the field. They started 6-7. It looked like that great offense was going to roll. And then they went 6-27. Every shot was blocked or was a brick. We'll talk about them later. But I apologize for making you watch that disaster game.
And you know what? And I thought I was going to have to like extract an apology out of you we're at the dentist. I appreciate, I accept your apology. It's all right. We'll talk about that game a little bit later. In the meantime, let's weigh in on our top story of the day here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Burns and Gambo, the weigh-in. Brought to you by Revitalize Weight Loss.
All right, it is Suns Day around here on the Burns and Gambo Show and the flagship home of the Suns, 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. That's because the Suns, once again on national TV tonight in Utah, taking on a Jazz team that's a rematch of a game we just saw a couple of nights ago. But just like a couple of nights ago, Gambo, once again, the theme of tonight's game has kind of turned into one of more survival with the guys that you've got instead of a Western Conference showdown between two of the best teams in the conference. Because, once again, we're talking about the guys who are not available for tonight's game. Yeah. No Ayton, no Crowder, no Payne, no Mitchell, no Gobert. It's going to be another one of those kind of nights for the
Suns.
Well,
Ayton is getting very, very close to returning. These are my expectations. That he'll probably miss the game on Friday against Minnesota. I think he'll get one more game, and then my expectations is that he'll play on Sunday when they take on San Antonio. Those are home games. So I think after tonight, I think there's one more game. He could play, but I don't think he will. But I would expect him back by Sunday. So that would give him a few more days. Sunday they play the Spurs. So he's close. Friday or Sunday, he should be back. I'm leaning towards a Sunday return for DeAndre Ayton.
All right, and just the schedule as it looks, since you brought it up, they're home against Minnesota on Friday. You mentioned that'd be the game that he may be back for. Probably not. The game you're aiming for, like you say, is Sunday against the Spurs. Then they're home against the Brooklyn Nets. We'll see where they stand health-wise for that nationally televised game next Tuesday. Then they go on a road trip back east. They go to Atlanta. They go to Washington. They go to Chicago. They go to Philly. So certainly it would be nice. And, of course, knowing full well Ayton is very close, and I saw your tweet about that earlier, the two guys that we kind of turn our attention to become Jay Crowder and Cameron Payne with those wrist injuries. As you had reported yesterday, neither one of those wrist injuries serious enough to warrant them kind of reevaluating what they're going to do at the trade deadline. They feel like the timeline for those guys' return is quick enough. They don't need to do anything drastic to account for it at the trade deadline, which is very, very good news. But once DA gets back, we'll kind of look towards those two to see when they get back and see if this team can get back to full strength for the last half of the season.
They got the Wizards coming up.
The Wizards, who blew a 35-point
lead.
Did you see Luke Kennard at the end of that game?
Calling game?
Gambo.
Called game.
He pulled a Reggie Miller. Seven points in 9 seconds.
Yep.
7 points in 9 seconds.
Drove to the free throw line for the final shot and ends up nailing it. That's unbelievable. I mean, and that's a Clipper team. Kawhi Leonard hasn't played a game this season. Paul George has been out since December 22nd. Marcus Morris was out of the game for some personal reasons. Reggie Jackson, Zubac, Batum, Ibaka, they were all sidelined for the second half. It's unbelievable that the Wizards lost that game. I saw a fan, lose his mind. You know, there was a video of a fan losing his mind over that.
Yeah.
It was 93-76 at the end of the third quarter, and it was 102-91 with 5 minutes left. And they couldn't stop the bleeding.
No.
Just unbelievable.
They couldn't.
That's unreal.
The Phoenix Suns, in the meantime, come into this game, and we just went through the injury report. And for the Jazz, all we know about right now is Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert, which means a lot of the guys that they presumably were missing the other night in Mike Conley and Bogdanovich and Ingles, maybe an O'Neal, maybe back tonight. We'll see. They haven't said anything specific about those guys. Suns right now are on a 7-game win streak. They're 37-9. This has matched the best start in the Suns franchise history. Only the 06-07 team matches this one in terms of the win-loss record and the pace that they're on. Right now, Gambo, they're pacing for 66 wins this season. That would be a franchise record. There are some reasons to believe that they might not necessarily finish on that pace, just based off of kind of recent history. And our friends over at Bright Side of the Sun pointed out there are a few teams in the history of the Suns that have kind of started off on a very similar pace and always find a way to kind of slow down by the end of the season.
I just don't know. I think this is that type of team, you know, when they're, you know, when you ever race go-karts?
Yes.
And, you know, sometimes you take your foot off the gas going slow around the corners and, you know, then you speed up and you take your turn and you go slow around the corners. I don't know. They seem like that team. I'm going to step on the gas, full throttle, and I'm just going to go. And I'm just going to keep going and keep going until the end of the race. And I think that's who they are. And so I don't know. I mean, it's a great discussion. You know, will the Suns slow down? Are they bound to slow down? They're on pace for 66 wins. That'd be a franchise record.
Yep.
And I understand that this pace seems frenetic and crazy. But they've been, you know, there's a lot of guys that have missed time, and they're still winning games. Their depth is tremendous. I mean, you know, they've had, you know, outside of, I mean, Books missed games, DA's missed games, Campaign, Jay Crowder, Cam Johnson, JaVale. I mean, everybody's missed games outside of a couple guys, and they still keep winning. So I don't think that that's a factor in slowing them down. Injuries has not seemed to be a factor at all in slowing them down.
No, I mean, I'm looking right now because I'm just curious. Okay, yeah, here it is. What did we say? 66? They're on
66
pace? Okay.
Is the pace to, yeah, that's their pace.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. 13 teams in the history of the NBA have won more than 66 games in the history of this league. Of course, most recently would be the 15-16 Warriors. They won 73. Michael Jordan's Chicago Bulls won 72. Michael Jordan's Chicago Bulls won 69. Then you have to go back to the 70s when you're going to find a couple of Lakers teams. The 60s when you're going to find a 76ers team. Warriors from a couple of years ago won 67 as well. And I guess my point is that there are... It's certainly something you can attain. There are teams that have won 67. There are teams that have won 66. But if you think about all of the teams in the history of this league, and only 13 teams have gotten to as high as 67, that to me suggests that it is hard to keep this pace, that not very many teams win basketball games at an 800 winning percentage pace like the Suns are. And I agree with you. I feel like this team is different. I feel like this team is not prone to those letdowns, you know, like inevitably every NBA team goes through. Do you think they're going to make it? Do you think this is the all-time franchise record holder for most wins in a season from the Suns? You think they'll get there?
I think that this is going to go down as the best team. The best team. I just checked in with the Jazz, and no Rudy tonight, no Donovan. Looks good for Ingles, Royce, Conley, and they're not sure about Bogdanovich.
Okay.
So no Rudy tonight, no Donovan tonight. It looks good that Ingles, Royce, and Conley will play, and they are not sure about Bogdanovich playing tonight.
All right, so we'll get more of a kind of a full squad matchup tonight between these two teams, perhaps?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, listen, they did a good job with the guys that they had, that Trent Forrest and Jared Butler and Daniel House, who was on his second 10-day contract. Those guys played well against the Suns the other night.
Yeah, no doubt. Be ready to see your favorite breweries again as the Arizona Strong Beer Festival returns on February 19th at Bell Bank Park in Mesa. Tickets are on sale now. You can win a pair by visiting the contest page at arizonasports.com. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo Show, one of the biggest talking points for this team in the coming weeks will be the trade deadline coming up on February 10th. The Suns, there are some rumors out there. One of the big names being rumored, is it even realistic? Gambo's got some information. We'll share it next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Suns Day, brought to you by Four Peaks Wow Wheat on the home of Phoenix Suns basketball. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Suns Day with Burns and Gambo.
Suns Day because tonight at 8 o'clock, it's a later tip time in Salt Lake City. The Suns taking on the Utah Jazz. You'll hear it here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. We'll have James Jones on the show coming up a little bit later, part of our weekly visit with a member of the Suns front office. We'll do our round ball roundtable today as well. Kevin Ray from the broadcast team is going to join us. But right now, Gambo, we've turned our attention, since it's Suns Day, to the trade deadline. Today is January 26th. The trade deadline is on February 10th. So we're just a little over 2 weeks away from the big day. And yesterday, when talking about this team with the best record in the NBA, this team that's got this window now to win an NBA championship for the first time in franchise history, we talked about their level of aggression when it comes to the buyout market and some of the assets they have in that regard. But then there's the good old-fashioned trade deadline, and as always, there are going to be some names out there that I'm sure will pique Suns fans' interest.
Yeah.
We're trying to get to the bottom to see if any of them actually make any sense.
Well, is there any name out there that pops to you? Any name that you've heard a lot that you want to discuss?
Well, I know you've brought up Eric Gordon multiple times. That's a name that you've mentioned on a few occasions. There's always the Thaddeus Young conversation that we've had a few times on this show. Those are probably the two that stand out the most when I think about the list, but there are others certainly as well.
Yeah, I would say not for the fans out there, not to get excited about an Eric Gordon trade. I am not expecting them to trade for Eric Gordon. I'm not expecting them to trade for Thaddeus Young. Eric Gordon, you've got his money this year, you got his money next year, and just, you know, the role and where he plays. You know, if Devin's playing 38 minutes a game and Chris is playing 35, 36 minutes a game, you know, where does a guy like Eric Gordon fit in? He's a scorer, right? He's definitely a scorer, but come playoff time, those guys play a lot of minutes. And so I would say, I do not believe that they will trade for Eric Gordon. I will rule that out. I do not think that's going to happen.
Are we okay? Wait a minute. You're ruling it out?
Yeah, I don't. I mean,
are we playing music, or are we waiting until trade deadline day?
Well, if you want to wait to the trade deadline right now, I'm going to say I do not see a scenario in which they trade for Eric Gordon. So I'm going to say that I don't believe that they trade for Eric Gordon. So a lot of people are looking at that, but I don't see that happening. So yeah, to me, I'm going to rule that out.
There were eight names that were listed by Kevin Pelton today, eight under the radar NBA trade targets who could help a contender right now. Now we can debate how many of these actually fit the Suns and what they're trying to do, but here are eight names to be considered by contenders, and a couple of them we've talked about before. Eric Gordon is on the list. Thaddeus Young is on the list. We've had multiple conversations about him throughout the last few months. Robert Covington is on the list as a guy who might be available. Another interesting name. I don't think he'd have appeal here, given their depth at the position. But Goran Dragic is a name who Kevin Pelton considers to be an under-the-radar NBA trade target who could help a contender right now. I got to admit, before Cameron Payne turned a corner to a certain extent, Goran Dragic would have been a very interesting name to think about for the Suns to bring him back for a run. That is a good, solid backup point guard for an NBA team looking to make a finals run. They don't need it. But that would be one of those luxury items where in those minutes where Chris Paul's not going to play, your level of comfort when Goran Dragic is on the floor, just speaking hypothetically now, that is a name that would have, I'm not going to lie to you, that would hold a little bit of appeal to me, not only reuniting him with his old organization, but just kind of that veteran savvy that he brings to the table, you know?
Yeah, listen, everybody's got these backup wings and, backup twos and even backup fives. Backup ones are hard to get. You know, they are more difficult to get. A backup one. A lot of people think that the Suns need to replace Landry Shamet. He's not playing very well. But, you know, Landry spaces the floor for them. He gets out in transition. And if Devin goes down, you know, look, they're not looking for him to score a lot. When campaign comes in, it's very different, right? When Booker's on the court, he gets so many of the shots. Chris Paul is a facilitator. Chris Paul's not taking a lot of shots until you get to the fourth quarter. Now, when Book goes out, that's when everybody else scores. You know, campaign was at his best with Javon Carter because he's a non-usage guy, because Cam is a scorer. So I don't think the Suns are going to look for another scorer like an Eric Gordon, because that's when campaign is at his best, because Cam looks to score. You got to look for opportunities. So that's, you just got to look at how they play. You know, they're not built around a backup shooting guard getting a lot of shots. The Suns aren't. When Book goes to the bench, that's when everybody else gets their shots. So I like some of the names, but campaign is playing very well, and they like his ability to score, you know, off that bench when he comes in for Chris.
Well, yeah, and for him, it's a matter of health. And as you said in the last segment, there's no lingering fear right now that they're going to need to change their tactics going into the trade deadline with the status of campaign, that they think it's not an injury that's serious enough that's going to require them to address it going into the trade deadline. Yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying about Shamet. If you look at his numbers, it's really hard to classify him at this point other than anything other than a disappointment. I mean, he has not.
Yeah, he hasn't played well.
He has not played well. I get what you're saying, especially when Jay Crowder is healthy. Most of your scoring from your second unit is going to come from the Cams. It's going to come from Payne, and it's going to come from Cam Johnson, and it might even come from JaVale and even Bismack Biyombo in the post. I get all that. But Shamet is a guy that when you brought him in here, you were thinking, we were thinking, everybody was thinking. Now, there's a guy who will bring instant points in the bench minutes, a guy who will shoot the ball well. He has not shot the ball well at all in his time with the Phoenix Suns. And getting him right, or at least more right than he is now, I would say is, if they're not going to make a big move at the deadline, that becomes one of their major priorities over the last 40 games of the season, is to have him going into the playoffs playing better than he is right now, because he's really not playing that well.
Yeah, and it hasn't affected their ability to win basketball games one bit. Not one bit have they been affected by, you know, Landry not being, you know, this dynamic scorer. I don't know that they want a high usage guy next to campaign. Because Cam's going to, you know, Cam is a guy that, you know, like I said, Cam was best when he was playing with Javon Carter, because Javon wasn't, you know, a scorer. He was a non-usage guy. He'll play defense and he'll hustle, do all of that stuff. That's when Cam was at his best. So I think putting another scorer out there, I think that hurts campaign, and it lessens the effect that you get with Cam and the ability and the stuff that he could do.
Yeah.
He's done a nice job for them, campaign. He had that little blip where he didn't play well, but he's turned it around and he played well. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, trades excite people. They excite people. These names, you just went over all the, that's exciting. I mean, it's exciting, but there aren't a lot of meaningful trades that are ever accomplished. Not a lot. I mean, they're fun to talk about. And again, they excite people when you start talking about these names, or could this guy fit, could that, but there's not a lot of meaningful trades that get made. So, I think the Suns will always look. They'll always look and try to see if something's out there. But my Like an Eric Gordon, I don't think it's going to happen. And Thaddeus Young, I don't think it's going to happen. And, you know, right now I wouldn't anticipate them making any type of significant move at the deadline.
Yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying. And I think in part and parcel it goes with the fact that the Suns just don't have a whole lot to sell right now in terms of their assets other than their future first. I'm fixated based off of our conversation yesterday. I'm fixated on what might be out there in the buyout market. That to me is the more just given that the Suns have actual assets in that regard that they can offer these players. I'm very interested to see what becomes available in that market when we're talking about the deadline, not the trade deadline necessarily, but the buyout market deadline, because there will be players, I think, who are available. One of the biggest questions following the Cardinals' loss to the Rams was the lack of snaps for Steve Keim's most recent first-round draft picks in the game in which it mattered the most. How does this Cardinals draft class look now that we're almost a year removed from it? That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
The Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter poll presented by Sanderson Ford.
John Gambadero, Dave Burns here on this Wednesday afternoon. Let's roll out our Twitter poll question of the day. A unintended consequences to this poll question. We were not expecting some of the backlash that we got from it, to be perfectly honest with you. We thought we were just kind of asking an innocent question. And not, I don't want to make it sound like a lot. We've had hundreds of people vote on it.
Up in arms, Burnsy.
No, it's not. Like a half dozen people have made some comment about it. And it didn't even occur to me that this was how might people would react to this. So what's the poll question?
Well, what do we have? We'll go through the question first. The question is, how much are you willing to give up for a coach like Sean Payton? And the options are multiple first-round picks, a single first-round pick, second-day picks, or third-day picks. But
what's the unintended consequence that we're finding on our Twitter page?
Well, I think everybody can agree that it's been a lot of positive talk about Sean Payton retiring, quote-unquote retiring, but Bountygate has not been brought up that much, and I think the first time I saw it was when people were commenting on this, I would give up nothing for him. Bountygate, no way, don't want him, don't bring him anywhere near the franchise. A good amount of people are not happy that we would even pose this question.
What do you think about that, Gambo? Does Bountygate affect the way Cardinal fans think of do you think of that anymore when you think of Sean Payton? Still?
No.
Me either.
No, I think about a guy whose worst season was 7-9.
Me too. Me too.
I don't care about Bountygate these days.
So when we were coming up with the poll question, I never thought people, Kurt would never have it, and think about Kurt Warner, and I didn't realize that people were still, that was still
on
the brain.
That was the defensive coordinator.
Yeah, right. That was, what was his name? Greg Williams, right? Yeah.
Greg Williams, yeah. Yep.
And Payton.
Bountygate.
Payton
Scandal.
Paid for it. He was suspended a whole season for it.
A whole year.
Mm-hmm. But, I didn't think that impacted how people thought about Sean Payton at all, especially given that he could be a very hot commodity this time of year from now, potentially.
Well, I'll tell you this. For the people that commented, obviously it's a pretty big deal to them. But for the results, people are still willing to pay a good amount to get him on their team. Leading with 37.6% is a first-round pick, 26% is second-day picks, and then at 18.5% it's multiple first-round picks, and in last place is third-day picks. So people are willing to give up some assets for Sean Payton.
Yeah, listen, you never know with some Cardinal fans. I mean, I think I still get asked whether Darryl Washington's coming back.
you know? You and Darren Urban from azcardinals.com.
Darryl Washington, is he able to come back now?
Yeah, hey.
He's 47 years old.
I saw him down at Lifetime, man. He was running on the treadmill really well. Yeah,
I saw Darryl Washington.
Whoop-de-doo.
I think he can come back.
Yeah, fantastic.
Guys, Darryl Washington, remember him? He was so good. Is he eligible to come back now? I heard he's working out.
Let it go.
I mean, how old do you think Darryl Washington is now?
Darryl Washington at this point is probably in his mid to late 30s.
I'd agree. Somewhere in there.
I would guess. Now you're going to make me look, aren't you? Darryl Washington.
38.
Are you guessing or did you look it up?
I'm guessing. I have no idea.
He was born in 86. So that would make him 35?
35, okay.
Right? 35, mm-hmm. 36, I think. It would make him, he'll turn 35. 36 in October. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, he ain't playing.
Yeah. I still get asked about him every once in a while. Bountygate. We're going back to Bountygate. Bountygate. Okay.
Seriously, we came up with this question during show prep. It never occurred to me that people would go, no, I don't want the Bountygate guy. Really?
He hurt Kurt Warner.
We're still on the Bountygate thing, huh? Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, right. It was awful. I'm not going to sit here and sugarcoat it, but I didn't realize that was still a thing. In the meantime, while the Cardinals kind of continue to assess what went wrong and what went right, but also what went wrong, the folks over at ESPN.com ranking the rookie classes from this past year, looking at each team's draft and looking at how they fared in relation to how much they produced this year. And for as disappointing as Zaven Collins was in his rookie year, I was kind of surprised at how well thought of the number the Cardinals got in this story was, to be honest with you.
Yeah, the Cardinals draft was in the upper half. It was considered in the upper half. It was 13th, so actually 13, yeah, upper half. And I think a lot of it had to do with Marco Wilson as a fourth-round pick starting and playing, and Rondale Moore getting a lot of play-in time. And you know, I think those two guys, you know, they had a big impact on that class. Zaven Collins didn't play a whole lot. But it wasn't like he was a zero, and there's probably a lot more expectations for him. But I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, getting your second round pick and getting your fourth round pick to, you know, to play quite a bit.
I'm sure that had almost everything to do with it. The other guys in the draft class, of course, were Victor Dimukaji, who played a little when they were missing all of their edge rushers. Actually, if
he
I remember
right. He played in a lot of games, I believe.
I think
he played in a lot of
team snaps,
yep.
I think, when it was
right.
all said and done. But
Which is fine. I mean, it's what you're looking for when you're drafting somebody in that, you know, in that air. When you're drafting somebody in the sixth round, and obviously Tay Gowan was part of a trade.
Right.
But when you're looking, when you're drafting somebody in that sixth round or so, you're basically looking for somebody who can contribute on special teams.
And I think James Wiggins did as well on special teams. But now we're starting to get down into the seventh round. When we talk about this draft, you know, you talk about the guys taken in the first 100 picks, the first 130 picks. Those are the ones that you kind of, certainly in the first round, but even later than that, second round, third round, fourth round, those are the guys that you're hoping are going to contribute. Now, remember with Marco Wilson, they gave up a draft pick this year to move up to get Marco Wilson last year. So for me, that does carry a little bit of extra burden on him to kind of justify that to a certain extent. Like they, you know, they sacrificed a pick to go get you. And I thought he held up well until the end. And then at the end, I don't know if it was a rookie wall. I don't know if he was just getting figured out. I don't know if it was the injuries and coming back off the injuries because he missed a lot of time the last month, a month and a half of the season. He was really exposed in that Rams game. They were going right at him, and it didn't seem like they were very shy about it. He's got to get better. Rondale Moore, I think, is potentially a guy who could give you the freedom to let Christian Kirk walk if you wanted to.
Possibly.
Possibly.
I like Christian Kirk. I love that stat yesterday. He was top five on catches made for targeted players. 75% of the passes that were targeted to him, he ended up catching, which is top five in the NFL. So I did like that. Interesting note here, I looked at the other NFC West teams. The 49ers were 29th in that. They traded up for Trey Lance. But they had a first-round pick, a second-round pick, a third-round pick, but they were ranked 29th. The Rams were ranked 24th, and Seattle, you don't even remember Seattle's picks. They only had three picks the entire draft. They were 17th. So the Cardinals, 13th, Seattle, 17th, the Rams, 24th, the 49ers, 29th. This ESPN story puts the Cardinals ahead of the other competition in the NFC West for their draft class.
Yeah, which you know, says something about the other team's draft class. Also should be pointed out that two of those teams probably really could give a rip about their draft class at this point because they're playing in the NFC Championship game with a right to go to the Super Bowl. Look, this draft class, it's not going to be solely defined by Zaven Collins, but let's call it like it is. If it's going to be Vance Joseph because he's back, or if it's going to be a new defensive coordinator, either somebody they hire on staff or somebody that they go outside the organization and get, they've got to figure out a way to make Zaven Collins work. Because Zaven Collins, for all the promises that he was going to come in and be given that job. He was a failure in that regard, and that he didn't play well enough at any point in the season to take it from anybody. Isaiah Simmons played a lot of snaps last year, but didn't play them when they mattered the most against the LA Rams.
Which is odd, because he had over 100 tackles. He had four forced fumbles.
I know.
Mean, those, he had a good year. I mean, he had a good year. I mean, it's crazy. It is crazy. And for some reason, they like to rely more on the veteran players in that clutch situation, and you want to go with the young guys. I got to think that that's going to change, man. I got to think car payment that is going to change big time, that those two guys are going to be the focal point next year, that linebacking core.
Yeah, you would think. I mean, they're your last two first-round picks. They're off-the-ball linebackers, which is unusual that you would spend back-to-back number one picks on off-the-ball linebackers like that. They've got to figure out a better way to make those two guys work for them within their scheme, or there's got to be a better connection between the defensive coaching staff and Steve Keim to make sure the right players who fit the scheme are being drafted, because you can't have number one picks like that not being used when it matters the most. And I think you're right. That's going to be a big priority for whomever the defensive coordinator is next year to figure out a way to use those guys. You can text us your thoughts right now. The FanDuel text line is available to you at 620-620 right now. When we come back, it was a letdown so bad that Gambo actually started the show by apologizing to me. The Wildcats, abysmal last night against UCLA. And in the meantime, in Tempe, there's actually some talk about Bobby Hurley's seat getting warm. We'll share both of that with you next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, afternoons.
At 2 o'clock, straight up 2 o'clock, here on the Burns and Gambo Show, John Gambardero offered an apology to me, and I assume by extension to everybody who was listening last night, right? Not just me, but I would assume...
I hyped that game up, man.
Boy, you
I hyped
did.
That game up.
You did.
I did.
You...
I hyped it up. I watched Arizona play so many times this year, and they kicked everybody's ass, and I really believe that they were one of the best teams in the country. And there's no... And I even... Listen, I even have my wife. I'm like, hey, sit down and watch this game with me. This is
oh,
going to
poor
be a
Chelsea.
Great
oh, my.
Game.
I hope you apologize to her.
Well, she was like, they suck. I swear. After they missed, like, there was a point they missed, like, six shots in a row. And she's like, they suck. And then they just kept missing and missing. And then they kept getting every shot blocked.
Right.
They have all this size, and they were getting all these shots blocked.
How many blocked shots did this guy with a do-rag on from UCLA.
That guy, the guy who thinks he's Jim McMahon, he had like a white bandana around his head. He's blocking everything. I don't even know who the guy is. They showed his sister in the crowd. She's some great basketball player in high school. And he's like blocking everything. I'm like, but how do you guys letting Jim McMahon block all these shots on you? It was a terrible game.
Well, thank you for recommending. Yeah, you oversold that,
oversold.
And it underdelivered. Boy,
I oversold and underdelivered.
U of A lost to UCLA 75-59 last night in a game in which the Wildcats shot 30.7% from the floor. It felt like
well,
they were about
3-point range.
From 3-point range,
from
they
three,
were
brutal.
They were 7-28. Yeah, they just
25%.
They could
at one point they missed like 11-12 in a row. That kid Creasa, he kept shooting and shooting and shooting and like stop shooting, like literally stop shooting.
Creasa was 0-12.
Oh my god, Mathurin
was Mathurin was 5-22. At least he could shoot from three. He couldn't hit from anywhere else. For goodness sakes,
Mathurin is such a good player. I love that kid. You know, from Montreal and. Just a great player. And Creasa is a good player, too, but he was awful. They were just really bad. I mean, they were really bad. They even with that, I mean, you know, that kid Watson was blocking shots and then standing over people and taunting them. But, you know, Mathurin's a good player. And Tubelis, who he didn't start the game, and I didn't know if he was going to play or not. He came in, but he wasn't able to add any impact at all. So it was a very frustrating game because I do think that, you know, that U of A is one of the better teams in the country. They just played. They couldn't have played any worse than they played last.
No. Yeah, and they'll have a real quick turnaround before their shot at redemption. They play them in just a handful of days again at McHale Center. I think it's next Thursday, if I'm not mistaken, when those two teams meet up again with a game against ASU kind of sandwiched in the middle of there. They'll have their chance. It was UCLA's largest margin of victory over a top five team since 1980. You were a young man the last time UCLA.
Since John Wooden and Lou Alcindor with
yeah,
UCLA.
Since Bill Walton, who was calling the game, he was in the middle of the last UCLA team.
I mean, there are times he's tough to there are times he's entertaining. There are times he's tough to listen to.
Man, they showed a shot of the Bruin bear outside of the stadium. He growled like a bear. It was just typical Bill Walton. Look, I'm gonna watch him again. They're a top 10 team in college basketball. They've obviously got a very good basketball team, but there is sort of a...
I got a big bet on this one, too.
What's your bet?
Some UCLA fan. You know, how are they going to kick ASU's ass, U of A's ass again? So I made a bet with Che Tor. He follows us on Twitter.
Oh.
And so we made a bet. $50 to the charity of the winner's choice.
Okay.
Because he thinks UCLA is going to smoke him in Tucson. I go, they're not going to win in McHale.
Good luck with all, man.
UCLA's not going to win in McHale.
You're sliding all your chips into Tommy Lloyd's basket right now. You are all in on this team, Gambo.
It's all right. Money goes to the St. Mary's Food Bank if I lose. It's not a big deal. It's
all
a
right.
Good charity.
I just want to make sure you're okay. Speaking of ASU, they did not play last night. In fact, the last time we did see them play, actually it was against USC, but the time before that was the Stanford game. And, of course, we all saw that Bobby Hurley, who didn't coach in that USC game, he was suspended by the Pac-12. He was fined $20,000. He just acted terribly towards the referees as he stormed out the floor in the Stanford game.
Mind.
He completely lost his
mind.
He does that. I mean, look, yes. This is not a new thing for Bobby Hurley. That doesn't excuse it. That doesn't make it right. But he does this.
He's got a short fuse. And, you know, as somebody that has a short fuse, because I do too, I mean, it's very hard to control that. And doesn't mean Bobby's not a good coach or anything like that. He has a short fuse. And it was building up and building up and building up and building up. And then when they fouled the guy with 1 second left on a controversial call, he lost his mind.
Yeah.
And he wanted to let them know that I've lost my mind.
41,
and that short fuse was lit.
41 free throw attempts for Stanford, only 9 for ASU in that game. The reason we're bringing this up, this happened a couple of days ago. Our buddy John Wilner for the San Jose Mercury News, the leading Pac-12 insider as far as we're concerned, wrote a story today in which he made the compelling case that about how Bobby Hurley shouldn't be on the hot seat, which I read it and I thought, I didn't realize Bobby Hurley was on the hot seat. Like, I had not... Those are conversations that maybe I just haven't been paying that much attention to it, because obviously if you've got to convince me to watch U of A basketball on a Tuesday night, maybe I'm not paying as much attention to college basketball as I should. I didn't know we were talking about Bobby Hurley being on the hot seat, but John Wilner wrote a story today in which he made the case for Bobby Hurley shouldn't be on the hot seat. Did you think temperatures were getting warm for Hurley over at ASU?
No, but something's got to give with... something's got to give with this ASU program. It's they're regressing. They're getting worse. There was a lot of thought last year that they were going to have this, you know, with Christopher and Bagley, that they were going to have this just amazing season, that they were going to have a really good season, and it didn't happen. And you know, now this team, they're not going to go. This team's not going to the NCAA tournament. They're not very good. So that's the thing you look at is. Is Bobby on the hot seat because of he lost his temper? Or is Bobby... Now, listen, he didn't throw a chair across the room a la Bobby Knight, right? He didn't
nope.
do anything to a kid. He didn't hit anybody
nope.
or touch anybody or anything. He got angry and he lost his mind. He wanted the officials to know about it. So it's not a big deal. It's not that big of a deal to me. The bigger deal is the basketball program and the state of the basketball program. They're not very good. They're not going anywhere. Tommy Lloyd and U of A, one of the best teams in the country. That happened very quickly that U of A was able to put themselves in a position where they got blown out by USC the other night. And they lost to Stanford, and Stanford's no good. I mean, they lost that game to USC by 20-something points. They're 6-11 overall. They're 2-5 in the Pac-12. And that's what you got to think about. You got to think about is Bobby the guy that could get this ASU program turned around.
Yeah, and if we had John on the show right now, and he's a frequent guest of our program, I don't think he would make the case that he's trying to sell people on Bobby Hurley being on a hot seat because he lost his temper. Quite just the opposite, in fact. He's writing the story, making the case for why Bobby Hurley shouldn't be on the hot seat, and he's not just bringing up him losing his temper. He's bringing up what you mentioned last season, the fact that they're not very good this season, that they kind of hit the reset button on the roster, and all that stuff. He writes, Hurley clearly miscalculated with his roster last season, and he hasn't found the answers yet this year. A serious self-scout will be required this spring, but he's recently removed from back-to-back-to-back 20-win seasons. The program was relevant pre-COVID like it hadn't been in eons, and he's proven capable of recruiting high-level talent. The hotline never hesitates to call for a change when the situation warrants it anywhere in the Pac-12. At this point, ASU is not one of those situations, is what he wrote. But given the uneven performance on the floor the last couple of years, certainly you could say that going into next year, he is going to be somebody to keep an eye on to get things turned around with that program.
Yeah, and you remember, man, when he had those back-to-back 20-win seasons and, you know, going to the NCAA tournament, I was like, man, I thought that I would finally get my wish. You know what my wish has been for 25 years with ASU Athletics, right?
Of course, a coach who is good enough to get hired by somebody else because it meant he did a good job here.
That's all I want. That's all I want. It's all I want for ASU. I want ASU to have a coach that's so good that another team hires him away. You know why? Because that means that guy was good, that they won, that they did some remarkable things. We never get that. What do we get? We get coaches get fired. Everybody gets fired. They all get fired. They're fired because they're not good enough, because the programs stink. They're not going anywhere. I would absolutely love for a guy, and who was the, I think John Cooper, was that the last time somebody liked an ASU coach because of success, and they said, I want that guy?
Yes, that was the last time.
That was the last time?
I mean,
it was 100 years ago.
It was.
That is my wish for ASU athletics. I wish that they have a coach in basketball or football that is so damn good that all these other programs say, we got to have that guy. Yeah. That guy at ASU, look what he's done. I want him.
When we come back, coming up 45 minutes, about the best team in the NBA, and who better for our weekly round ball roundtable than the voice of the Suns? Kevin Ray joins us for two segments next on the Burns and Gambo Show.